Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
A very pleasant Friday to you. Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. We are continuing to look at the transcript of a meeting that took place on November 28, 2010 in Stockholm, Sweden, when the Mormon Church sent two Mormon historians, Marlon K. Jensen and Richard E. Turley, Jr., to Stockholm to meet with members of the Swedish Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints regarding questions they had about church history. They had come to see that a lot of what the church history says is not the way it actually happened. And so they wanted some answers from these men. And as we've been going through this transcript, so far we're just kind of getting through the questions that they were wanting to ask. And we're not to the point yet of when they're actually going to start answering them. We want to do that next week, but we want to finish up what these questions really entailed. And they were good questions. We begin with the first question for today is having to do with the first vision. And of course, the problem is these members had come to realize that the history of the Mormon Church tells us that there was a vision in 1820, in the spring of 1820, that Joseph Smith allegedly had of the Father and the Son appearing to him, telling him that all the churches were wrong, their creeds were an abomination, and their professors were all corrupt. Of course, there's no actual historical proof that that vision took place in 1820. In fact, the revival that Joseph Smith does describe surrounding this particular alleged first vision took place actually in 1824, not 1820.
And it's the same issue as with the story of the translation of the plates. Here we're seeing with the first vision, the question is, why don't these two pictures correspond in the way that it really happened? So the church is giving one view, and they're not telling the whole story. That's the question. That's the problem, I think, that the questioner is having.
Again, it's a good question to ask, because if there was no first vision, even according to Gordon B. Hinckley, the 15th president of the church, he said if Joseph Smith did not see the Father and Son, we are engaged in a blasphemy. That's a pretty strong term. But I think at least Gordon Hinckley understood the ramifications of this. If this didn't really happen, then our view of God the Father, our view of Jesus, is certainly outside of orthodoxy. And so he would be correct. He is engaged in a great blasphemy if that didn't really happen. The next question had to do with sanitizing church history. One of the people asked the question, 5 years ago, I discovered that the church as an organization had systematically deceived me by only telling a carefully selected one-sided version of church history. The discovery was extremely painful to me and my wife, who kept it. We didn't tell the children or grandchildren. Do the leaders of the church really believe that they are actually inspired by God to act in such a way? Just to tell a selected, nice version of the church, the history of the church, in order to get more converts? Do they believe they are inspired to do this?
Talk about honesty in a question. This person is laying it out, that the church might consider sanitizing its church history in order to make it more appealing to people so that they might be more likely to join.
Well, couldn't you say that the church's sanitizing of history, their own history, is the whole reason for this entire meeting?
Yeah.
These people have been a victim of a sanitized church history, and now they're finding out because of the internet. And you cannot control the information that goes out over the web. The Mormon Church has lost control of the information it gives to its people. And now these Swedish members are realizing they were not told the whole story. They've believed only part of the story. And as we've mentioned many times, according to Robert Matthews, a BYU professor who actually wrote an article online, he said that if you don't tell the whole story and you allow people to draw conclusions that they probably would not have drawn had they had the whole story, that's the same as lying.
And the questioner, I think it was Madsen himself, said, can I fill this in a little bit? In the PBS television special on the Mormons 5 years ago or something, I actually was in Florida, so I had time to see it. Elder Packer says there, it is not good for the members to know all the truth. I have a DVD with me if you'd like to see it. He used to say things like last conference as well that changed afterwards. He says that it's not good for a member to know the truth. He said as a watchman on the tower, he might stop things that could hurt. Even the hurt can hurt. Yeah, just to fill in what you're saying, Elder Packer's not the whole church, but he's very known in the church and outside the church.
Well, yeah, Packer's known for this. I mean, Packer has more than once made comments like this. In a book that he wrote, Let Not Your Heart Be Troubled, page 110, Packer said, in the church, and I might mention, if you don't know, Boyd K. Packer is a Mormon apostle who's still serving in the Mormon church. In the church, we are not neutral. We are one-sided. There is a war going on, and we are engaged in it. It is the war between good and evil, and we are the belligerents defending the good. We are therefore obliged to give preference to and protect all that is represented in the gospel of Jesus Christ, and we have made covenants to do it. So I guess that's his license to not tell the whole story, is he's made covenants not to tell the whole story, if we're to understand what Packer's saying there. The next question had to do with the blacks in the church, mm-hmm. those of African heritage. And of course, that is a question I think a lot of Mormons have, because even though a lot of Mormon leaders had a number of reasons as to why those of African heritage, or who had, as Mark Peterson said, one drop of Negro blood, were banned from holding the priesthood, now, as I've mentioned many times, the Mormon leadership has this doctrinal amnesia, and now they don't know why for all those years they were prevented from holding the priesthood. That, again, I think is a fair question.
Well, and the question is a long one. We don't have time to read the whole thing, but I want to read this part about Apostle Mark E. Peterson.
We should explain Mark Peterson. He died also in the 1980s, but he gave a very controversial sermon in the 1950s called Race Problems as They Affect the Church.
Yeah.
And boy, I tell you, when you go back and read that speech, that's, wow, that's really eye-opening.
And you can find that, I think, on the internet. I think you can find that speech. The question says, is this true that there were some apostles that went against the question to give the priesthood to the blacks in 1978 when they voted on whether or not they should allow the blacks into the priesthood? And then he says, I was on my mission in the 70s, you know, and we loved Mark E. Peterson. He talks a lot about the blacks and the pre-existence, and they are damned and so on because they were black. For me, he was an apostle. For me, he was a Doctrine and Covenants Section 1.
And I might mention he's referring to Section 1, where if it's the Lord who speaks and his servants speak, they are the same. That's what he's referring to in DNC Section 1.
My mouth, or my servant's mouth, and I thought he was a servant. But then he comes out, and he was teaching false doctrines. If they look at it now, at least if I start to preach it, I would think that it would be called false doctrine. And many people felt a great spirit. They would convert if the spirit testified that it was true. And it was not. To this, I have a personal experience. He seems to be pretty ticked that the church at one time taught it very specifically that the blacks were damned. And then all of a sudden, in 1978, things change. And that's what we had read earlier. Earlier this week, we had given the quote to say, doesn't that bother you?
And of course, Marlon Jensen said it doesn't bother him. Nothing in Mormonism bothers him, he said.
That's a man who has a closed mind then, who has all of his presuppositions and everything all lined up in the way he wants it to be, but not the way reality is.
It's a man who either has all the answers or is greatly deluded, one or the other. But this same Hans Madsen goes on to ask about the temple experience that he had. It was not the joyous occasion that many Mormons will tell us their temple experience is. He actually talks about how he couldn't sleep at night after going to the Switzerland temple in 1970. And after being in there the first day, I was terrified. I couldn't sleep at night. I thought, what is this, you know? There was a black hole in my heart, and I had nightmares the whole week. And I can understand that if you look at the temple ceremony. And of course, he went in 1970, and this was before it was revised in 1990, and they took a lot of the blood oaths out of it about the having your throat cut from ear to ear and things like that. They don't do that any longer. But that was also a question that was raised. And then there was a question about Adam God, the Adam God theory as it's described. And we certainly know that that was something that Brigham Young did teach for much of his latter life. And he certainly did believe that. And my theory is that he actually got that idea from Joseph Smith himself. though Joseph Smith never really teaches the complete package like Brigham Young did, he did teach that Adam was the Ancient of Days. And of course, the Ancient of Days, we know it to be another name for God. Mm-hmm. And my theory is that Brigham Young merely took those two concepts, put them together, and comes up with Adam being God. Now, was Brigham Young consistent in this teaching? No. But was Brigham Young consistent in a lot of things he taught? No. But that is an issue, because now, even though that was something that the second president of the Mormon Church most firmly believed and actually said at the end of that sermon that you better pause before you treat this doctrine lightly or with indifference because it will prove your salvation or damnation, Mormons don't believe it now. In fact, if you were to bring up the Adam God doctrine to most Latter-day Saints who are at least somewhat familiar with the topic, they would probably roll their eyes and look at you and like, you need to get with the program because we don't believe that. Some Mormons might even think that they never believed it, but that's not the case. It certainly was something that Brigham Young taught and even for a time was part of the early temple ceremony.
Well, we have a lot of issues that were laid out on the plate here, and next week I think we need to go over the answers that the church historians gave and maybe help people understand the fill-in, because there's a lot of things that they don't have. And in fact, some of the answers they give are one paragraph or less, so they don't give a whole lot of attention to these things. And so I think we owe the listeners a little bit of an explanation as to how not only did the church answer, but what are the answers to these questions.
And again, as you've mentioned before, Eric, we do have this transcript, at least a link to it, on our website at mrm.org on our homepage, and we also have links to the actual recording
yes.
of that evening. And so if you're wanting to know what they did actually have to say and you want to hear it for yourself, by all means, we encourage you to do so. That's why it's there.
The title of that on our front page is called A Fiery 2010 Fireside in Stockholm, Sweden. If you click on that, you'll have not only an article, but you'll have these links that you referred to.
We thank you for being with us this week, and we hope that you will tune in on Monday as we continue to look at these questions that were raised by these Swedish members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. Are you confidently prepared to share your faith with your Latter-day Saint friend or acquaintance? Do you feel that you have an adequate grasp of Mormon doctrine and history? If not, then we encourage you to attend Mormonism Research Ministries' Compassionate Boldness Symposium on Saturday, September 21st. This four-hour event will take place at Calvary Chapel Wasatch Front in Clearfield, Utah. MRM's Bill McKeever and Eric Johnson will focus on such issues as the Book of Mormon, the Godhead, and salvation. Special emphasis will be made on how to answer LDS proof texts and the questions Mormons may pose. This event, by the way, is free and open to the public, so everyone is invited to come. For those who would like to do further research, a book table will also be available. Again, this Compassionate Boldness Symposium will take place starting at 9 a.m. on Saturday, September 21st at Calvary Chapel Wasatch Front, located at 564 South 800 East in Clearfield. We look forward to seeing you there.